Evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the March 2nd, Berkeley County Board of Commissioners meeting. At this time, we will have our roll call. Madam Clerk.
Chair Corey Ballance.
Present.
Vice Chair Louis Hodder.
Present.
Commissioner Ronald Robertson.
Present.
Commissioner Vivian Saunders.
Present.
Commissioner Michael White. Chair, we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you so much. At this time, we'll have an invocation and Pledge of Allegiance by Commissioner Robertson.
You can stand if you care to. I'll say good afternoon. And I pray and saying we all need to have a little talk with Jesus and he will make it right. Thank you, Lord, for all day, the past and days to come. We'd like to give you thanks in advance for all the things you are doing for us. Please bring this country together in your name. We pray. Amen.
Amen.
A pledge of allegiance to the flag of the
United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Robertson. At this time, ladies and gentlemen, we will have the floor open for public comments. We ask that you please limit your comments to 3 minutes. 3 minutes.
Bria Stewart? Brian, sorry.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Brian Stewart. I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I've been invited to this area to possibly bring my CDL program. I'm looking to expand here into the North Carolina area. This is my letter of intent to state and community officials, state of North Carolina. AMB CDL Truck Driving School respectfully submits this letter to formally express our intent to establish a commercial driver's training location within the state of North Carolina. Currently, we're operating in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Our institution has provided over training for over 20 years under the leadership of myself and my employees. I'm a United States Army veteran. I served almost 10 years in the military. I went to the first Gulf War. I've trained hundreds of individuals over the years. I've also been in business as a trucking company. I've been in business for over 30 years. From 2022 to 2025, our annual enrollment increased from 281 students to over 323 students. But sustained growth and operational scalability. In 2025, AMB CDL Truck Driving School achieved a 93.4% CDL pass rate, significantly increased, exceeding the national first-time testing averages. Through expansion into North Carolina, we intend to provide training for roughly 150 students in year one. And we plan on scaling to, you know, in the next, by year three, up to 300 students a year. By doing that, we're going to create direct and local employment opportunities, strengthen workforce development pipelines, and we're going to support freight capacity and logistics infrastructure growth. By year three, conservative projections estimate that this initiative could generate approximately $16.5 million in new annual wages, contributing meaningful, reoccurring economic and tax impact within the state. Our intent is to operate in full compliance with all North Carolina regulatory and licensing standards. We seek to collaborate with state and local leadership to ensure alignment with workforce development and economic growth priorities. We respectfully welcome the opportunity to further discuss this initiative to provide any additional documentation necessary for review? Does anybody have any questions? I'm just asking that, you know, give us a chance possibly to expand it in this area. I'm asking for your blessings if everything comes to fruition, and I would love to be able to be a job creator.
Sorry, could you state your name again?
Brian Stewart.
Ms. Stewart, have you spoken with anyone from the local community colleges at all, or are you not trying?
You know what? I'm kind of on
independent
moratorium.
Okay.
I'm just getting my feet wet there. The mayor, I was with him all afternoon. We're walking around. He introduced me to some people. I met quite a few people today, and he's excited.
And I asked you that because sitting with us now is Mr. Jeremiah Jackson, who's our VP of Continuing Education at Martin Community College. So,
okay.
And with him is our director of the Bertie campus, Ms. Morris. So I want to speak with him. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Stewart. Welcome. Madam Clerk.
Elizabeth. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Nice to be here. My name is Elizabeth Roach Kane. I live on Cooper Hill in Windsor. My husband and I moved here in the summer of 2020. We had started a business called the Alliance of Native Seed Keepers in 2019, heirloom seeds, vegetables, flowers, and herbs. And when we started it, we thought it was just going to be a slow growth and that we were going to beg our friends and family to buy from us. But then, as y'all recall, 2019 led into 2020. And what was that big thing that happened in 2020? So we opened our online seed store right when COVID shut everything down, and the home gardeners, which are who we focus on, found us, and we were able to make quite an impression online. And so soon after that, we came to Bertie County. My husband's family has very deep roots here. I'm not away. I'm from upriver, off the Chowan River, right across the Virginia line. And in August of 24, after operating an online business now for 7 years, we were able to purchase a building in Coleraine. As you can imagine, some of those buildings need a little help. So we spent the past year renovating, remodeling, and getting the store ready to be open for our first brick and mortar retail store. We had a great article for our soft opening in August. And then now on March 21st, we're so excited to invite everybody, especially the commissioners, to come to our grand opening in Coleraine. Our parent company is Alliance Native Seed Keepers, because there's a broader mission, but we named it Bertie County Seeds. We wanted to celebrate the agricultural history of this county. We want to continue to provide economic development, as the theme is tonight. We already employ about 15 people right around Coleraine, and we want to increase that to, my husband says 100, 200. He'll crave these jobs as we'll all let him. But this grand opening, from 10 to 6, we're going to have a ribbon cutting at 1 p.m. I have a letter here to invite y'all to the ribbon cutting. Would love to have y'all here, and a flyer. So Ms. Davis kind of send that around. And would absolutely love for y'all to come by and see. We're at the shop every single day, so please pop in and see us. And we get our seeds from, we grow some ourselves. We hire contract growers, and then we have some people that we've been with, but our dream is to be able to not only hire more people, but to also get some of the local growers in on our seeds too. So love to have y'all, and thank you so much for allowing me to invite you tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Glad you're having success here.
Yes, sir. We're doing great. Very well. Would anybody like to talk? And thank you to the county for helping us with all of our permits. Thank you very much. Hope to see you soon.
You're welcome. Thank you. Madam Clerk?
That is all I have, sir.
Okay. Now we'll move to our reports and appointments. Presentation to the Sheriff's Office by Clerk Tanya Davis.
Commissioner and citizens, this not comes from me as a clerk. This comes as a citizen, and this is my daughter, Kiara King. On January 31st, 2026, the winter storm hit Bertie County, covering the area in several inches of snow and ice. My daughter, is a detention officer at Burt T. Martin Regional Jail. She was working her first regular shift from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Although she was scheduled to leave at 6 p.m., the rapid accumulation of snow and worsening road conditions prevented the night shift crew from reporting to work. As a result, she had to remain on duty until relief could arrive. Knowing that her little small car has low ground clearance, I knew that she was not going to be able to navigate home. So I contacted Sheriff Ruffin, and I asked if whether a deputy would be able to bring her home. Sheriff Ruffin assured me that when she was ready to leave, to give him a call. Hours passed slowly, me as a mother, just waiting for her to get home. So after another deputy was able to pick up another detention officer and take her to the jail, they finally got there about 11:15 at night. I called Sheriff Ruffin and I let him know that she was ready to go. And he sent a deputy to transport her home. He did not just send a deputy. He sent what we felt was an angel in armor. In hazardous conditions with limited visibility and blizzard-like winds, Deputy Gerard Benson drove through relentless snow, often unable to clearly see the road and the ditches along it. To put the conditions in perspective, it took him an hour and 30 minutes to drive from the jail on County Farm Road to White's Cross, a drive that normally takes 14 minutes. When he finally arrived, Deputy Benson pulled as close as possible to my back door. He got out of his vehicle, went around, assisted my daughter out of the vehicle, and walked her up the snow-covered steps to my back door. excuse me. That night, Deputy Milton, and Sheriff Ruffin. That night, Deputy Benson was not simply a Burt T. County deputy that was performing his job. To our family, he was an angel in armor, protecting a young woman trying to get home from work that he did not even know was 5 months pregnant. I cannot adequately express my sincere gratitude and overwhelming appreciation to Deputy Benson and the entire sheriff's office for their professionalism, compassion, and dedication. So in recognition to Deputy Gerard Benson, Deputy Danielle Milton, and Sheriff Ruffin for their outstanding service, compassion, bravery, and unwavering dedication to public safety, your willingness to go above and beyond the call of duty to assist citizens is making a meaningful difference that exemplifies the highest standards of law enforcement and brings great credit to the Burt T. County Sheriff's Office and to the county that you so faithfully serve. So my daughter, Kiara, and I would like to present each of you with a plaque. This plaque is for Deputy Sheriff Gerard Benson in recognition of your outstanding service, compassion, and dedication to go above and beyond the call of duty during the winter storm of January 31st, 2026. With sincere appreciation, Tanya Davis and Kiara King, March 2nd, 2026. Thank you. And for Deputy Sheriff Danielle Melton, she is the other deputy who has drove all the way to Trap to pick up a detention officer to take her to work so my daughter could come home. Presented to Deputy Sheriff Danielle Melton in recognition of your outstanding service, compassion, and dedication to go above and beyond the call of duty during the winter storm of January 31st, 2026.
With sincere appreciation, Tony Davis, Pierre King, March 2nd, 2026. And to the best sheriff ever. This is presented to Tyrone M. Ruffin, Sheriff of Burke T. County. Your steadfast leadership, integrity, and unwavering dedication to the citizens of Burke T. County exemplifies the true meaning of public service. With sincere appreciation, Tanya Davis and Kiara King, March 2nd, 2026.
Hear, hear. All right.
We're so thankful for those special recognitions, and we're so thankful for our sheriff department doing what they do best, that's serving the citizens here of Burke T. County. All right, next we'll have introduction of the new county ranger, Lance Swindle, by Mr. Mike Petronic. Trust you. Okay. You ain't want me to mess it up.
It's okay. He's looking out for me already. Good evening, county commissioners, county manager, citizens of Burke T. County. Pleasure to be here again this evening. Mike Petruncio, I'm the district forester for District 7, North Carolina Forest Service here in North Carolina. It's my pleasure this evening to introduce Lance Swindle as our new county ranger for Burke T. County. Lance has plenty of experience with us, with North Carolina Forest Service. He's worked 16 years with our agency previously. For the past 6 years, he's been working with emergency management in Washington County. And I'm glad to have him on board with us. Burke T., as you know, is a very busy county with the forestry industry and working cooperatively with our other agencies and serving the landowners of Burke T. County.
Thank you all for having me. Good to be back talking to commissioners at the podium. Like I said, I did it in Washington County as the emergency management director for 6 years. And of course, I was presenting budgets and giving updates ever since. Actually, 2007, I started in Washington County. County Ranger kind of blindsided me at the time and asked me if I wanted to get in front of the commissioners and give them an update, because he did. So I just kind of come natural to me ever since then, and like to keep the people aware of what's going on. And, you know, and a lot of times, not just forest industry, but fire control and all the things that Forest Service does, you know, in the office, out of the office, doesn't always get seen or touted on. But we've already started getting busy. January and February, even before I got here, they were running a considerable amount of fires. Of course, this time of year, grass hasn't greened up, so it does get busy. Even after green up, it doesn't mean that it's not, you know, the fires are going to quit. Looking at the outlook for fire season this year, it's not looking really good until about the end of May. Maybe 1st of June, we might get a little relief, and that's just dependent. But thankfully, we're full staff. We have a full staff, and every employee that is working in Burke T. County and those from other counties actually coming in and helping us with all of our forest management goals and accomplishments, serving the landowners of Washington County, information and education, Smoky Bear stuff. Everybody knows what Smoky Bear stuff, but that's what the information and education does. It gets out to the schools, public events and stuff like that. I've always been big on that, making sure we have representation in as many events and out in the public as we can. So, like I said, I ran the program in Washington County full time for 10 years and then moved on into emergency management. So, I'm just looking forward to being in Burke T. County.
Sir.
And glad for y'all I'm glad that y'all would have us here tonight so that I can just introduce myself properly.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, Mr. Lance, we welcome you here to Bertie County.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Look like you're a great addition, so we're grateful. We're grateful.
Yes, thank sir. You.
Appreciate y'all's time.
Sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mike.
All right. Request by TransCare Medical Transport.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Greg Joyner. I'm with TransCare Medical Transport. I'm applying for a medical transport franchise here in Bertie County. Currently operate a BLS and ALS franchise paramedic units in Hertford County. We transport patients mostly between ECU health hospitals in Eastern North Carolina, including Bertie Hospital right here in Windsor. We've been called numerous times to transport patients here inside of Bertie County from the hospital here in Bertie, but cannot do so because not being able to have a franchise. Since our location is just outside of Olander, which is in Bertie, we're in the community of St. John's, which is right outside, right across into Hertford County. We'd be willing to provide emergency mutual aid assistance if requested, if we were granted a franchise for Bertie. TransCare really only want to kind of add a level service to Bertie County like we have to Hertford. Goal is to shorten the patient's wait time to help medical providers move patients out of the hospitals of a time that really needs to be coming out as quickly as possible. My brother and I are owners of TransCare Medical Transport. We both been first responders in the fire service. I've been in there for 30 plus years, and my brother's been in there for a little over 25 years. I think we'd be an asset to the community. Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the time.
Okay. Resolution of adopting the Northeastern North Carolina Regional Hazard Mitigation Plan by Ms. Tracy White. How you doing, Ms. Tracy?
All right. How are you doing?
Good.
Good to see y'all this evening.
Yes.
So you have a resolution to adopt the update to the Northeastern North Carolina Regional Hazard Mitigation Plan. And basically the resolution is going to spell out that the county or jurisdictions have a responsibility to adopt the regulations to protect public health, safety, and general welfare of the citizenry. The state emergency assistance funds pay for this update. It is a 5-county regional update. And I do have a PowerPoint. Joe's getting it up. And this, I can't take credit for this PowerPoint presentation. This was the last presentation on the plan that was used by WSP, which is the consulting firm that created the plan and went to each jurisdiction and held meetings. We started holding meetings in July of last year. So our 5-county region is Bertie, Martin, Washington, Terrell, and Hyde County. Are all one plan. I'm not going to go through the entire plan because it's about 685 pages, and I don't think you really want me to go through that plan in detail, but we do have a plan. We've been under a plan. It has to be updated every 5 years. It's a requirement by statute that it's updated every 5 years, and our 5-year expiration date will be in April, so all the communities are adopting this month. And that includes the counties and the municipalities in those counties. Next slide. Joe, we can't see it on the monitor. Still can't see it. having a little bit of technical difficulty here. Here we go. Okay, that was an agenda from that meeting. You can go to the next slide, please.
Go to the next.
Okay, so project overview is basically they organized the committees, which consisted of staff members from each community. We had mayors there, we had commissioners there, we had staff there, planners, emergency management coordinators and directors. And in some cases, they may have had some citizens that were appointed to the committee. Then they went through a risk assessment, and then went through a mitigation strategy. And then we're in the final phase now, which is adoption and implementation. Next slide. And that's just an overview of our planning process. Basically, you know, the committee was formed and then went through assessments, set goals, and then in the last few steps, we drafted an action plan. For each county has its own set of action plans, mitigation action strategy, and now we have to adopt the plan and then it'll be implemented. Okay, next slide. That's just a little bit about how the plan is structured. It does go through it. It explains the planning process, and of course the area that's covered, risk assessment, capability assessment, the mitigation strategy, mitigation action plans, how the plan is to be maintained, adopted, and then some appendices for some other documentation that they had. Next slide. Okay, so this was just providing context and justification for the plan in the introduction. Next slide. Then they went through the planning process that explains the steps followed to prepare the plan and documents in the planning process. Next slide. The plan and area profile, which provided an overview of the current conditions in the plan and area. Next slide. Risk assessment identifies the hazards, discusses past occurrences, summarizes the risk, estimates exposure and vulnerability, and prioritizes the hazards for mitigation. Next slide. The capability assessment details existing tools, resources, and staff that can support mitigation project implementation. Next slide. The mitigation strategy reviews the goals and objectives and the process used to develop them, details the mitigation action identification and prioritization process, and then the action plans or tables that detail the mitigation actions by the county and the jurisdiction. And I have an example that we'll get to in a minute. Next slide. Plan maintenance. That section describes the plan integration, summarizes the process for monitoring and evaluating the plan, including the hazard mitigation plan committee's ongoing responsibilities. And plan adoption is the documents that local adoption requires, the resolutions to be adopted and signed. Next slide. The annexes, one annex for each county with detailed information for each jurisdiction on asset inventory, which is critical facility summary, lift and maps, risk assessment, the community specific maps, vulnerability tables, National Flood Insurance Program policy data, and other things like that. Mitigation strategy is the action plan. Next slide. The Appendix A is the local mitigation plan review tool. The Appendix B is the plan and process documentation. Appendix C is the mitigation alternatives. And Appendix D are references. Next slide. So part of the planning process, and we have documented, these are the dates that we had our meetings, and what the meeting topics were when we were going through this process, and they began in July of 2025. Next slide. We had two public meetings to gather data and input, and then had the draft when it was ready for the public to come out and have more input or commentary on the final draft of the plan. That was held in December at the Burt T. County Library community meeting room. Next slide. Plan outreach, we put it on the county's Facebook page, the county's website. Each community tried to get the word out about the meetings when they were having the public meetings. Next slide. They did a public survey August through December, and they did it on various hazards. And I don't, unless you want me to, I could go through all of these, and I can get you a copy of the PowerPoint presentation if you prefer it.
Question.
Okay.
Did they have any locations? Did y'all discuss any locations while y'all were doing your planning section? Like
locations of
mitigation property that would be mitigated?
No, it's not site specific.
They're not site specific.
This is more of a general plan that these five counties are under, and that addresses several hazards from hurricanes to even earthquakes.
Okay.
Of course, they're prioritized for what is more of a hazard in your county, and this year they did want us to add a resiliency component to it. But it this plan in place can be used if we do have a disaster and we want to apply for hazard mitigation assistance in some way, that we can be eligible for the funding with this plan. Without the plan, we would not be eligible.
No location had to been. Location didn't have to be identified.
No.
Okay, good.
No. It's for the jurisdiction as a whole and the region.
And the region, right.
Next slide. These were some of the things that they gathered at the meetings and from the surveys. And it's got, this was things that people felt like they were doing on their own for mitigation. Tree trimming, landscaping, altering drainage patterns, maybe around their homes or areas that they, you know, wanted to make sure that didn't have flooding, that sort of thing. People getting generators, having backup, just being prepared for emergencies, whatever, you know, the emergency is. And home improvements. Next slide. Okay, so this is still part of the public survey. Preferred mitigation categories. They went through emergency services, natural resource protection, and public education. Next slide. Still on public survey. These were some recommended actions that came out of those surveys. Was drainage and stormwater improvements, increased education on preparedness and prevention activities like planning, development, really regulations, climate change mitigation, etc. And you can see now they've been putting like some of the words, keywords, and things that people mentioned on those surveys. See resources evidently was a popular event there. Next slide. Okay, this is priority risk index report, and they have hazards. They start with dam and levee failure, drought, earthquake, excessive heat, flooding, hurricanes and tropical storms, coastal erosion, tornadoes, thunderstorm winds, lightning, hail, severe winter weather, sinkholes, wildfire, and hazardous substances. And they have a probability for the area, what their impact is, how big of a range it affects, the spatial extent of it, warning times, if there, warning times, duration of the events, what they're likely to last, and then they scored them. So that is a priority risk index score is on the end, and you can see the ones in red have a much higher, had a much higher ranking for risk. Next slide. The goals and objectives, of course, promote public health, safety, and general welfare of the residents, minimize public and private losses due to natural hazards through local land development regulations, capital improvements, planning and investment, and proactive long-range planning. Goal two was pursue funds to reduce the risk of natural hazards to existing developments where such hazards are clearly identified and the mitigation efforts are cost-effective. Next slide. Effectively expedite post-disaster reconstruction through the implementation of mitigation strategies, intergovernmental coordination, and provide education to citizens that empowers them to protect themselves and their families from natural hazards. This is through adequate warning notification, just trying to get more awareness out there for the citizens for whatever their high risk hazards are. Next slide. Okay, you can go to the next slide. So our mitigation strategy, and Joe, you can go to the next slide. I think the next three slides are gonna be the Berkshire County mitigation action plan. In the actual plan, the 685-page document, it's going to have one of these action plans for each county. Okay, so that's really tiny. I'm sorry. And I can get these to you. Can you see them? There's three pages of these. I don't know if you want me to go through each one, but this is basically going to identify, it's going to have a description of the action that is recommended to take. It will tell what the jurisdiction is that it should be taking those steps, what hazards that are addressed, participating agencies, the planning department, Berkshire County Administration, Emergency Management, or if it's a municipal town issue. It estimates staff time and cost for that mitigation action, and it gives a timeline, an implementation schedule, whether it's 2 to 3 years or 4 to 5 years, depending on what the action was. And those things will, as they're being carried out, they may change. Those timelines may change for those things, depending on how public meetings would go if we were to adopt another ordinance or change regulations in an ordinance, depending on how the board perceives or receives public input, that sort of thing. And so I have three pages of our action mitigation action plan for Berkshire County. We're almost through. So we're at plan adoption and implementation now. Every community must adopt the plan, including the towns and the counties. ongoing responsibilities are to have an annual meeting, or even more often if the jurisdiction wants to report on the status of the plan implementation and the recommended revisions, pursue implementation of mitigation actions, monitor funding opportunities, ensure continued public involvement, and integrate the plan with any other planning efforts where it can be integrated. And it will continue to be required to be updated every 5 years. This is just a, this was a project schedule. We've actually, this presentation was our last presentation of the plan from December. So since then, that was the proposed schedule. The plan has been submitted to NCEM and is ready. They have approved it, so now it's ready for our adoption. And they were expecting the adoptions to be February and March, and the final approved plan deadline is April the 12th. That's when our current plan expires. And that was it. And WSP did a really good job scheduling the meetings and attempting to get in touch with everyone and make sure everyone had the information that they needed, and worked with us very well to complete this plan, especially on the schedule that they had. They had it right, a tight schedule for it.
So you, as of now, you need a motion to adopt this Northeastern North Carolina Regional Hazard Mitigation Plan.
Yes, and I have been told that the public meetings that have already been held suffice, that you do not need to have a public hearing.
I've already checked it.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. We have a motion on the floor by Commissioner Saunders, second by Commissioner Robinson. All in favor that we adopt the mitigation plan, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. All right.
Okay, and I just want to let you know, and the citizens know, I'll get it posted after adoption. I'll get it posted on our website,
mm-hmm.
or a link to it on our website. And if anybody has any questions or wants to see any part of it, just reach out. Let me know.
I have one question. How often does it have to be revised?
Every 5 years.
Help. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Tracy. Now we have animal control updates by Animal Control Officer Skip Dunlop.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Mr.
Skip. I know when you saw something about animal control, you went, oh my God, here we go again. All our county manager, Mr. Vaughn, asked me, due to a recent decision we made, which would, let me just say right now that it's nothing new. It was taken by the public as is some new law that we've came up with that was completely irrelevant to anything that nobody had ever heard of. That's not true. It's the same thing that it's been. I've been doing this 19 years, and it's the same law that's been. Basically, this is what it is. State law says you have to hold a cat or a dog for 72 hours. The county ordinance, which was adopted and made in 1982, says 5 days. And when Mr. Vaughn and I were talking, I said, you know, in order to serve the public and to keep the flow, we only have 10 runs, as y'all know. And we're talking about getting a new shelter. But when you only got 10 runs, you got limited space. And see, when you only got 10 runs, you have to, the turnaround, some way or another, has to happen. The Humane Society has been a great asset to Bertie County. They have helped out tremendously. They have adopted out animals that there's no way doing my job I could have got accomplished. But at the same time, we are the only one, according to our state inspector that comes and inspects us, we are the only facility in Eastern North Carolina, I guess, that the Humane Society works out of the same facility as the county animal control. You see that we're both working out of the same facility. Most places have a separate entity where they have their dogs at. So that creates a problem. And all I said was, instead of 5 days, Mr. Vaughn, I say we double it. I said that 15 years ago to Greg Atkins, you know, double it and do it 10 days.
Okay, Mr. Skip. I definitely understand you. But just for clarity, because, you know, the public is listening, but just for clarity, you said the state ordinance was 3 days.
That's right.
You said the county ordinance
presently
is 5 days.
Correct.
And you have, you're the county manager, y'all decided to go 10 days.
Just as a suggestion. It doesn't have to be that way.
All right. Now, I just need you to know, let the citizens know, what is it that you're speaking of? You're saying 3 day turnover, 5 day turnover, 10 day turnover, but what is it you're actually speaking of?
The dog has to leave the facility one way or the other. My side of it will be euthanasia to kill the dog.
That's what I was after.
Yeah.
So they'll understand exactly, you know, what happens.
Just for some reference, I checked with Mike at Martin County this morning. I'm a patrol officer. They go by the state law. 72 hours is all day. You know, it's 72 hours. That's all they allow. Some facilities do it based on, you know, whether they think this animal is adoptable or whether it is not. You know, Jessica told me that sometimes, you know, you can tell when an animal comes in whether you think it's suitable to be adopted or not. That's not real hard to figure out. I think one of our problems is we hang on to just about everything, and sometimes things are just not adoptable. But that being said, it really doesn't matter to me. You know, I think people have the misconception that I'm Dr. Death or something, that I want to just kill everything. That's not true. You know, the side of that is people don't take into consideration what that entails, honestly. For 19 years, I've had to be on that side of it, and that's an emotional toll on you to have to euthanize that many animals. And people will take it that I get some type of joy or satisfaction out of it, which is not the case, but it is a necessary evil. Because the Humane Society of the United States say that they take in approximately, I think it's like 8 million dogs a year, and half of them, 4 million, have to be euthanized. So it's not something that's just popped up recently. But like I say, due to people, I think it took the public by surprise, and bless our heart, with social media, it got shit spread like wildfire. They were eating Mr. Vaughn up, and Mr. Vaughn was innocent, bless his heart. He didn't even, I was the one suggested it. The commissioners didn't do it, nor did Mr. Vaughn. I want to make that clear. But, and it wasn't something that I just dreamed up the other day when we were talking. Like I said, it's the same thing that's been since I've been here, basically.
Okay, Mr. Skip, let me ask you something.
All right.
Can you explain to us and the citizens how it impacts us when we have animals in excess of those days?
When you don't have room at the facility, when calls come into dispatch, you got to tell Miss Jane, I can't come right now due to we're full. I can't come get your dog, you know. And I've made it, I have made it work. But what that entails is somebody telling Mr. Lewis, I don't watch y'all's animal control officers doing. I called 3 weeks ago, and he still ain't coming. He keeps talking about he's going to come, and he ain't come. You see?
So you can't come?
My hand's the one on the chopping block is what I'm trying to get you to understand, because I'm trying to make it work, but you don't have room to make it work. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard math. If 10 dogs come in this week with me and Monterey at work, if 10 dogs come in, we need them dogs to go out, mm-hmm. or I don't have any space to work, you see? And so when you hang on to them, what it entailed was me holding court every week on whether Fido over here gets to stay, or this one gets to stay, or whether you have a transport for this one. In my opinion, I shouldn't have to go through all that. I should have a workspace provided. Sure. You know, and when somebody calls, if you got 3 runs open in their eyes, I've got room to work. You don't never know when you might have to pick up 5 dogs. You know, so you got 2 quarantine runs that has to stay open. Therefore, dogs that have bit somebody, I have to keep those open. So I got 10 runs. That's as simple as it is. But all I need for somebody to say is, Skip, when you get full, don't worry about it. I'll handle the public. You know, yeah, when they call you, Mr. Corey, and it's fussing with me, all I want you to do is call me and say, don't worry about it. I told you that if the rum's a fool, you don't have to worry about it. So that's fine with me. You know, but
right.
I'll tell you this, and I don't know whether he wants me to do it, but Dr. Shelton, when I first started and the Humane Society came down there for the first time, I was so excited about them coming because I said they're going to be an asset and they're going to help us. And Dr. Shelton said, well, are they going to have their own facility and their own entity to put their animals? And I said, no, they're going to work out of our shelter. He said, it will not work. And I didn't think he was right, but he was. We have went through it, but it will be so much better if they were a separate entity. And maybe that can be the case in the future. When we get our new pound, you know, something may can happen. I don't know, but that's all of it. That's just all there is to it.
Mr. Skip, we appreciate you. I think you have really opened the eyes where people better get a better understanding of what takes place down there and right. How, you know, we have to keep rooms available for, you know, incoming calls. And after 10 days, well, the 10 days that you have recommended, after the 10 days, which by the ordinance, we're only committed to 3 days, am I correct?
3 days by the state, 5 by the ordinance.
By the ordinance, okay. But after we go past 10 days, now we're having to feed extra. We're having to do a lot, you know, it becomes a...
And I will say this. I did find out from the state inspector that there is no limit on how long you keep them. I was thinking that there was. There is no limit. She said you can keep them however long, but it's a cost to the county. And after 15 days, they have to be vaccinated, and Vicky can do that. So that's never been a problem. But after 15 days, they have to be vaccinated. And after 30 days, you had to start providing what they call incumbents. You have to start playing with the dog, taking him out on walks, and you have to keep a log of all that stuff to present to the state, you know. So as you're keeping them there months and months, you have to start doing things like that. So,
Ms. Dunlop, you said so, 72-hour state.
5 days,
county.
And I said double it.
And when did that happen? When you say double it? How long has it been? 10 days.
I told Mr. Vaughn about 2 weeks ago. I told Greg Atkins about 15 years ago.
So it's been in place?
Yes, sir. Well,
yeah,
the
board. A lot of the stuff that came on social media.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And it was.
The first thing he said, I know the clerk was getting a lot of calls also. That was not the statement by Mr. Vaughn. That was taken out of context, you know. And I clearly, when I was called by the press, I let them know, no, Mr. Vaughn never said it. That was never stated by him. He read the ordinance in 1982. Exactly what you said was set up. So the first thing this board needed to let the public know, Mr. Vaughn never done that. I think they had a pitch box on the shelf, read them, you know, coming out here.
And that's why I wanted to make that clear to Vivian. You know, I wanted them to understand that it won't fall that did it. You know, it won't necessarily me 2 weeks ago, me 15 years ago, I guess. But anyway.
Well, Mr. Skip, we're
all
back.
I have.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I'll have to admit, until recently, I had not read the dog ordinance because it's probably the only ordinance that predates me in the county. It was written in 82 by Mr. Jenkins. And we've got, I think we have copies for all of y'all. I'm not 100%. Yeah, I think we do. Anyway, if you look on page 5 of this, we're recommending that y'all amend this ordinance because, frankly, as it's written, it really is difficult to understand. Now, if you look at section 2 where it says notice to owner, It says immediately upon impounding a dog, the dog warden shall make, quote, reasonable effort to notify the owner and inform such owner of the conditions whereby the animal may be redeemed. And then if the owner is unknown and cannot be located, a notice of such impoundment showing the time of impoundment shall be posted for 5 days or until the animal is disposed of, whichever is last. Now, that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because that means that, you know, if Skip wanted to, he could keep the dogs down there for 6 months. The problem with this is that, and you know, I don't want people to think I dislike dogs. I've owned over 350. I used to raise them. But, you know, there are serious fines involved, and the county had to pay some in December because of unclarity in this. The county needs to amend this ordinance. Whatever your will is, you know, if you want to do it, you know, the dogs are to be disposed of after 72 hours, fine. 5 days, fine. You can make it anything you want to, but the way it is now, it makes it so confusing. You can't make 5 days or whichever is last make sense. So, you know, you need to set an actual time limit so Skip will know what he's supposed to do. And it is our responsibility, your responsibility, to give him that. It's our responsibility to point out what we perceive to be a significant weakness in this ordinance, because technically, under this ordinance, you can keep every dog that's ever gone in there for 10 years if they live that long, but the expense is dramatic, as he pointed out to you, you know. And we didn't have the vaccine capabilities 25 years ago when it's, you know, before Skip even started here. So whatever your will is, you need to set a definite time. And if it's, and if it's 10, like Skip suggested, he's the one that runs the show, I'd suggest that makes some sense. But, you know, 5 is legal. You can't do less than 3. You can do as long as you want to out on the other side. But I don't do social media, thank God. So I don't know what people have been saying, but if somebody wants to save these dogs, they can come adopt them. You know, but you need to amend your ordinance.
Gotcha. So, County Manager, Commissioners, I sit on the table to take it into work session. Okay.
Made a statement. Yeah. Is it a hindrance to you to have the Humane Society and the shelter together? You alluded to it with an outright statement.
Only to the extent. Like I said, they have been a great asset in many points. The only thing it is the congestion part, you know, having too many animals. Other than that, they have been very beneficial to me and the county. But the congestion is what it is, you know. That's basically it.
Okay.
Well, Skip, thank you.
Yes, sir.
When I call, you'll jump on the job, man.
State inspector did say this morning to me, she says, Skip, you already know that you even gonna be on the bad side with one part. You can't be on the good side with both. And y'all as county officials know that. Nobody's gonna be happy with y'all.
Well, we thank you for that, Skip.
Yes, sir.
Yep. All right, at this time we'll have a financial summary by Finance Director, Mr. Willie Carroll. How you doing, man?
All right, how are y'all tonight?
All right.
You all have two monthly reports before you this evening. If you look at your January the 31st, 26 financial statements, you'll see that our revenues as of June 30th in the various cash accounts that we have total $19,793,926.85. This is approximately $448,528.66 less than what we had the prior year at this time. If you turn to your budget and expenditure reports, you'll notice that in the general fund, our revenues are exceeding our expenditures by $4,923,671.98. However, you need to take into account there's a transfer due to the Department of Social Services Fund 12, which would then was the amount of $1,094,815.29. So when we look at our overall revenue above our expenditures for the general fund and its transfers out, it's approximately 3,828,000 $856.69. And if you'll look to your next page over, in the water fund, our revenues are exceeding our expenditures by $419,785.36. Any questions? Okay. The next report that you all have is for February the 28th of 26. And you'll notice that our revenues as of February 28th to 26th in the various cash accounts is $18,481,747.19. This is only $160,004.96 less than what we were last year at the end of February. We had a couple of parcels within the tax department that transferred over and their sales didn't qualify for some programs, so we received some additional revenues, help that number come down. So if you look to your revenue and expenditure reports for the general fund, if you'll notice, our revenues at the end of February were exceeding our expenditures by $4,110,585.80. Again, there's a transfer that's still holding to the DSS fund, which is $1,448,359.38. So when we look at the total revenues that are exceeding the current expenditures within the general fund, we are working on a surplus of $2,662,226.42. The water fund, at the end of February, their revenues were exceeding their expenditures now by $504,947.56. Any questions?
I have questions about this, but where are we at with the audit?
The auditors, they are here for the next 3 days. We're pulling the samples to try to get as many things as we can accomplished. We did have a hiccup that I missed when they were talking about the single audit or the 24 audit. I was working off of one tab. There's a single audit that we're having to pull some samples for now.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Now we have a video message from North Carolina ACC President, Mr. Wallace Nelson. Is he live or is it pre-recorded?
Hello, Commissioners. I'm Wallace Nelson, NCACC President and Pequimans County Commissioner. I want to take a moment to speak directly to my fellow commissioners and county leaders about our upcoming NCACC district meetings in early March. Quite simply, your presence matters. We're at a critical moment for counties. The decisions being made at the federal and state levels are having real, immediate impacts on our local budgets, our services, and the people we serve. District meetings are more than routine gatherings. They are working sessions that shape how we move forward together. On the agenda, we will be discussing updates on our presidential initiative, key association priorities, and important legislative developments. I want to especially emphasize the legislative updates. We'll be talking about HR 1 and its practical implications for our county budgets, especially related to programs like SNAP and Medicaid. We will also dive into ongoing property tax reform discussions at the General Assembly, which could significantly affect how we fund essential county services. These meetings are a great opportunity to hear from each other and to build stronger relationships with fellow commissioners in your districts. So please join us to share what's happening in your counties, what's working, what's challenging, and where you need support. When attendance is strong, our message is stronger. When we are aligned, our advocacy is more effective. And when we learn from one another, we are better equipped to serve our counties. I know schedules are always busy, but I encourage you to make attending your district meeting a priority. Finally, I would like to mark your calendars for March 27th for our first forum on our presidential initiative, Counties Care, Access to Healthcare. We will be meeting in Raleigh to talk about the importance of healthcare and especially our rural hospitals. More information will follow, but I wanted to make sure you have March 27 on your calendars. So let's come together and lead together for our counties and for the people who depend on us every day. Thank you for all you do for supporting your association. I look forward to seeing you.
Okay. Thank you for your attention on that. At this time, we'll move to the next line item. We have no board appointments at this time. We will move to our consent agenda. First thing is to approve the February 16th, 2026 open close regular meeting minutes. We have a motion on the floor to approve.
I'll make that motion, Mr. Chair.
I have a motion by Vice Chairman Hoggart. Is there a second? Second by Commissioner Robinson. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. Next line item to approve the January 2026 tax release journal. Is there a motion?
Second.
I have a motion on the floor by Commissioner Saunders. Second by Vice Chairman Hoggart. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. Next line item, approved property management policy. There a motion on the floor. I have a motion on the floor by Commissioner Robinson. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Hoggart. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. North Carolina Department of Transportation, Office for Easements. There a motion on the floor. Okay, we have a motion on the floor to accept the offer by Commissioner Robinson, second by Commissioner Saunders. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. Other items. Scheduled dates for the board equalization and review. How you doing, Mr. Joder?
Good evening.
Good evening.
We need to set the dates for the board of equalization and review. Under the statutes, the meetings shall be held not earlier than the first Monday in April and not later than the first Monday in May. The board shall complete its duties on or before the third Monday following its first Monday. We normally have at least two meetings.
Okay.
Anytime first Monday in April, not later than the first Monday in May.
So we need a meeting inside of the first 2 weeks and then the second meeting inside of the second 2 weeks.
Right.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations, County Manager?
Certainly. Share your thoughts, but the first meeting in April is April 6th. We already have a meeting scheduled for that
date, and the meeting following that will be May 4th, which is the first Monday in May. How's that work for you, Jody?
I'm good. You said April 6th?
April 6th, uh-huh.
Okay, and May?
May 4th.
Yeah, I'm good for both of those.
Okay, so those are already regular scheduled meetings, Commission.
Okay.
Yep. All right, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, next line item. March 16th, 2026, Board of Commissioners work session. Everybody still good with that date? Everybody still good with the date? Do you know Commissioner White's status?
I am not certain, but he is online if he's available to speak.
Yes.
I'm not certain if he's still able or not. I have not heard that he's not.
But Commissioner White, can you hear me?
That's the other Mike White.
Okay.
Are you able to unmute Commissioner White?
I was able to send a request to unmute Commissioner White. I'm just waiting for him to accept that request.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
While we're waiting, okay, there he is. He just unmuted.
Commissioner White.
Hey.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are y'all?
All right. Are you still good with work session for March 16th?
Yes.
Okay. Vice Chair, is he able to be in the work session via?
Virtually. He can participate virtually. However, the law doesn't require us to allow him to be able to vote virtually.
Right.
But he can participate.
That's a crazy law.
Yeah.
That went away with COVID. I'm sorry.
I don't like it.
Okay. So we'll work that out. Next line item, 2026.
Chairman, I'm sorry. There is one thing I would like to ask of you all for the March 16th work session. Cooperative Extension Director, Executive Director Billy Barrow has requested that he attend. He and his staff usually annually, Cooperative Extension like to do a report to the people where they basically update you on what's happening with Cooperative Extension, and they also usually provide lunch. In order to do that, that would require us to change locations. Excuse me. Right, as of right now, the location for that meeting is the commissioner's room. But if you all are willing to allow Cooperative Extension to come, that would require that we move to the community meeting room so that they can make their presentation by lunch. So if you all are willing to do that, that would require a motion and a second and a vote from the board to meeting schedule to change the date for the March 16th work session from the commissioner's room to the community meeting room.
Okay. We have a motion on the floor by Commissioner Saunders, second by Commissioner Robinson. All in favor to allow amendment to the meeting location to be at Corporate Extension, and they provide lunch and updates. Let it be known by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. So moved. All right. 2026 NCACC District Meeting, Halifax Community College. March the 11th, 2026 at 10 o'clock a.m. to 2:30. Okay. Next line item is Commissioner's Report. Commissioner Robbs.
Chairman, I have a couple things. I'm glad to bring you back on down the state playoff. That state game, but the reason the game is playing in Warren County. At Bertie game class 6 o'clock. Other item I had, information I have to share, the self-help credit unit is running an initiative for first time buyers. $17,500
Okay. Commissioner Hawk.
No, I attended the Legislative Goals Conference that was in Washington. As you heard, Dr. Nelson, talking about the HR1 bill, part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act implementation, HR1. And basically what it talks about is it's over 3.1 million people receive health care, this is in the state of North Carolina, through Medicaid or Medicaid expansion. Another 1.3 million receive SNAP benefits. And then all of these individuals are served by county officers and county staff. So as he was saying, if these things are to take place, if this were to take place, it's going to affect the counties, particularly rural tier one counties like Bertie across the state. And we can't afford to do it. But if it happens, that's just, we have to find a way. How? I don't know. But and what's happening right now, the association is asking that they delay the SNAP benefits and administrative cost shares for any state until up until 2030. That's what they asked. Remove October and November 2025 from the fiscal year 2026 quality control sample and extend the whole harmless provision of HR 1 through January 31st, 2026. Provide financial assistance to states and counties implement HR 1 SNAP and Medicaid administrative requirements. Now, at this conference, there were a lot of things going on, but I'm only one person. And I understand, because of the weather situation before one of our commissioners was able to get out, they made the decision not to go, and I can understand that. But I was there. But when these things come up, and as important as it is in this day and time, it's kind of hard for one person to go to each session. So it is always nice to have more than two people at times. Because right now we're in a critical moment, not only in the state of North Carolina, but in this country. And, we need people there that's going to represent democracy in the right way. Thank you.
Commissioner Saunders?
Well, Tim, like I told Mr. Vaughn, I don't drive. What he's saying is going hand in hand with what's going on in the hood. Hood is making some drastic change. It's going to affect what you think. You got Windsor Oaks out there, and if they cut like they say they're going to cut, you're going to have a homeless problem. These regions, even the landlords who are on our landlord list for Middies housing, we're going to have to cut those landlords. So some of that funding that we got is getting ready to be reverted back. So it's like Commissioner Howard said, it is important for us to attend these briefings. It is important for us to go online and see which ones we can go to work to find out the things that are going on in my county. We are two officers down from being fully staffed at Bertie Martin Regional Jail. I think that's an awesome accomplishment. Director Freeman is doing an awesome job. We've hired a jail secretary. It is just that entire organization has turned completely around. And I'm very proud of the work that she and Mr. Suave working together with our clerk. And I got to thank County Manager Vaughn for lending us Tanya, because the things that, our whole policy and procedure map has been referred because of the work of Tanya B. So the jail is in a greater place because of that. So at this time, and our Black History Banquet was a success. You'll probably see an article in the paper about it. We uplifted the youth in our community. We had 19 tables sold. Commissioner Damron and his beautiful wife was there. The food was excellent. We had a 16-year-old from Bertie High School as our keynote speaker, and he got a standing ovation. Carmelo Gillum, look for his name because he's going places. He's headed for Morehouse. Unfortunately, Mark went to college. He's headed to Morehouse, but that young man did an outstanding job. Thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you. The only update I have is on last week, I'm sure most of you are aware that our neighboring county, Hereford County, received well over $51 million towards the new project. I know you're wondering why I'm reporting Hereford County, because it's going to create a lot of jobs for our region and within this county as well. And so we thank God for, you know, Mr. Stein and Mr. Davis, Don Davis, and all that they have done to, you know, serve Eastern North Carolina and this region. But, you know, we've been crying for jobs, and we've been trying for affordable housing, and things are on the rise as far as job-wise. Now we have to work on places for them to live, you know. So, but I believe, you know, we keep pressing and we keep beating the bushes and learning about the available resources, I believe things will change for the better. Now we'll have our county manager's report.
Chairman, I have two brief items. The first item is on February 19th, I attended the North Carolina Commerce Rural Infrastructure Authority board meeting, along with Chairman Balance and Economic Development Director Allison Browning. And we witnessed that board give away thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to municipalities and counties in North Carolina. And so it was great to witness that. And while we were there, we met some people and learned some things. And we are already working with some of those individuals to figure out how we, Bertie County, can tap into some of their funds. And we plan to do so for sure. The last item that I have for you is, once again, it is budget season. And so we are officially in budget season. And so this is a budget calendar that has been given to our department heads.
Thank you.
And so basically, at our last department head meeting, we had our kickoff and basically provided the instructions for submitting budget requests. So budget requests are due March 13th, budget requests are due from all departments, as well as outside agencies who are requesting it. So March 16th through the 17th, as you can see, we will review all of the requests received. And during that time, we will also meet with department heads and outside agencies as necessary, analyze revenue projections, and develop a proposed budget. On May 4th, our regular meeting on May 4th is when I will present my proposed budget to the board. And then we have the basically the month of May during our during that time after the budget is proposed budget is presented. During that time, the board usually identifies 2 to 3 dates to have budget work sessions so that we can you can all go through the budget line by item is line item by line item is the usual procedure that we do that. And so, of course, June 8th on our calendar is the public hearing that, of course, allows the public to come and provide that feedback on the proposed budget. And then on June 22nd, we do have a meeting already scheduled for that date. That is the date that we can adopt the budget ordinance, if not sooner. And of course, that has to be done by July 1st. However, we also have the work session March 16th, so we can start some preliminary budget discussions during that time. And if you all have any particular agenda items that you all will, and now we already have some because you've identified some already, but if you have any more agenda items for that work session for March 16th, please let us know. Yes. Yes, yes. Either way, we that can be sent electronically. Actually, it has already been sent. But if you are aware of other outside agencies or nonprofits who want to apply for funding that don't usually receive funding, we give us their contact information and we can make sure that they receive that funding packet or application.
Okay. Speaking of that, Juneteenth reached out. They want to.
Yes, receive those funds. Yeah. We have received that correspondence from Chief Cherry. Yes, and we'll make sure that that is provided to Chief
Cherry. Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
And now we will, I'd like to say, we're so glad to have our county attorney back. Mr. Lloyd, so glad to have you back. And we're also still praying for Jonathan. We realize that
appreciate it.
He lost his mom, and that's got to be difficult on him. But we thank you all for being who you are. We miss you all. And your colleague, he represented well, you know, while in y'all absence. So now we will have county attorney's report.
I'm bringing some of that 80-degree weather just later this week with me. I don't have anything until we go into closed session.
Yes, sir. Okay. Public comments, Madam Clerk. Jackson. Okay. Mr. Jackson, you have anything you would like to say at this time?
Well, I would just like to say thank you for having me. I have enjoyed listening to the meeting tonight. And if anyone has anything that they need from Washington College, please feel free to contact me. I will be able to link to business floor and just be able to talk.
Outstanding. Glad to have you with us on tonight. All right. We need a motion to go into closed session according to North Carolina General Statute 143-318.11A3, 4, and 6. Is there a motion? I have a motion by Commissioner Saunders. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Robinson. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll now be going into closed session. All right. Well, it sounds like we need a motion to come out of closed session. We have a motion to come out of a closed session by Commissioner Saunders, second by Commissioner Robinson. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. We are officially out of closed session. Joe, we have anybody in the waiting room? We have a motion on the floor to adjourn the meeting by Commissioner Robinson, second by Commissioner Saunders. All in favor, saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Meeting adjourned.